2 weeks ago on this program, you heard from the Reverend Jill Edens, who spoke passionately about her participation in the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina and her subsequent arrest. You'll remember her talking about the initiator of that model for committed citizen activism, the Reverend William Barber. Reverend Barber is the head of the North Carolina NAACP and a leading voice for justice, not just in his state, but nationwide. And so it should come as no surprise that he has also been playing a leading role in the response to the Trayvon Martin case. And I am very pleased to be able to welcome the Reverend William Barber to State of Belief Radio. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be with you and with your listening audience.
If you would start by talking about your own personal reaction to the not guilty verdict for George Zimmerman and how then you connect that to the other issues that you're addressing in the ongoing Moral Mondays protest in North Carolina.
Well, I think that you have to first look at the so-called stand your ground laws as a deep problem in this country, because we already had laws for self-defense. Stand your ground laws just add to the ability to perpetrate violence. And we often see that it's being used, the license to kill is being used in a more racialized way, if you will. You know, Trayvon Martin, if you think about it, it for me and for so many, represents a disturbing deja vu that must make us more determined to fight against violence, whether that violence is in Chicago or Newtown or in Sanford. And the deja vu that I'm talking about is 58 years ago, a young man went to the store to buy candy, and he ended up dead. His name was Emmett Till. And then in Sanford, a man goes to, young boy goes to the store to get candy, and he winds up killed.
Mm.
And the killer says that it was self-defense, but he stalked him. He profiled him. You have him on tape, profiled him using expletives to profile Trayvon. And Trayvon not able to speak. And if you use the logic that the jury used to make this decision, it would mean that if Emmett Till had fought back against his perpetrator, the people who abducted him, they could have argued that they killed him in self-defense.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's dangerous for not just black kids, but all kids. That means if a white kid goes in a community that happens to be predominantly black and somebody profiles him and says he looks suspicious, tracks him, stalks him, then incites him, then tempts him into an argument, and then kills him, they can claim that they did it in self-defense. This is a very dangerous precedent for jurisprudence. I know of a case, John McNeil, where it actually the opposite happened. A black man defended his son on his own property in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
He fired a warning shot against an armed intruder. Two white officers said it was self-defense. A white eyewitness said it was self-defense. But when the jury met and the DA pressed charges for life for murder, he received life without the life in prison. And only after that strong, active campaign in the NAACP were we able to get him out of jail. And then to get out, he had to plead guilty to involuntary manslaughter, which he had been acquitted of 6 years ago. So so black men are at risk on both sides of the gun, and that is very dangerous.
Reverend Barber, I read, left the National NAACP Conference to return to North Carolina when this verdict was read, and you were quoted as saying, "Let's stand our ground." Elaborate on that, if you will.
Well, I left because I have three sons, and when I heard about that morning, I looked over at one of my sons was with me. Another one was at a church conference there, and I immediately became very hurt, very angry, very discouraged. My sons are both big sons, strong, tall, but they're boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a sense of helplessness, a sense of hurt, a sense of anger. I cried about it, and I saw my son cry when Huckabee on the Fox News said, in essence, that if Trayvon had been more respectful and had respected Zimmerman, he wouldn't be dead. So he said Trayvon was not a hero because he should have been more respectful. And I saw an anger come with my son. And so I talked with them, but I needed to be back at Mall Monday because I needed to see a community of people, black and white, Latino, who still believe in humanity. I really came back for my own healing. And I testified. And in the midst of speaking to them, I said, we need to stand our ground on things like repealing Stand Your Ground laws. We need to stand our ground against violence. We need to stand our ground and push for laws that outlaw racial profiling. We need to stand our ground against all forms of violence. You know, as Coretta Scott King said, you know, keeping children in poverty is a form of violence. Producing more guns is a form of violence. Taking kids to education, healthcare is a form of violence. We need to stand our ground and believe in a humanity and the possibility of humanity to be different than what is being portrayed by these folk that are so afraid of something that all they can think of is their answer to every problem is cut taxes, make the poor more responsible, and give people more guns.
Right.
We need to stand our ground against that kind of philosophy.
So when you talk with your colleagues, and I very much understand you going back for your own good because you need to be with people you know have your own values when you go through something like this. But when you talk to them, what do you want to call for where you live and beyond?
Well, that's exactly right. What I was saying in that is I went back for that, but in addition to that, I went back to say to them, we must stop this proliferation of guns. We've gone gun crazy. Our legislature in North Carolina, this is what they've decided to do, for instance, at our state capitol. They denied 500,000 people access to Medicaid, poor people, poor children. 170,000 people unemployment. They've kicked 30,000 kids off of preschool, poor kids. Raised taxes on 900,000 poor people to give 23 families a tax credit, a tax break, attack voting rights, and then pass bills to put more guns in the street, allow guns in places where there's liquor being served, to allow guns on college campuses. So they've gone gun crazy. It's almost like we're in a like on Star Trek, we're in some kind of extremist warp, an alternative universe that doesn't even line up with our deepest moral values and our deepest constitutional values. So what I want to see is us be a catalyst for a new moral conversation, not liberal versus conservative, not Republican versus Democrat, but what is immoral versus what is moral, what is extreme versus what is constitutional. A conversation about our common humanity, a conversation about the common good. And in that conversation, we say we're not going to commit attention violence against the poor. We're not going to pass laws to promote policies that hurt and damage the least among us. We're not going to promote policies that actually uphold violence and promote violence as the answer to everything. And particularly the guns, we want to roll back the access to assault weapons. We want to repeal these Stand Your Ground laws in North Carolina and everywhere else. And we want to pass laws that end racial profiling. We've got to come back to our senses. I think too many people, the way I describe it, have become drunk on this Tea Party tea. and they've become they're under the influence of Coke. K-O-C-H. And we need to come back to our senses in this country, particularly down in the South.
You know, you could be charged with talking like a sane man.
I hope so.
it is so good to hear you elaborate those values and know that you're calling people back to them. How are you organizing around this? We got a good introduction to Morrow Mondays, which is just a phenomenal concept. How else are you organizing to do what you just talked about?
Well, let me give you one piece about Moral Monday. And this is, we've been organizing for 7 years, and one of the things you're seeing in North Carolina with this new legislature that decided to be like the George Wallace of the 21st century and extreme is they're actually reacting to our victories. We organized for 7 years, put something together called the Historic Thousand of Jones Street People's Coalition, more than 150 organizations with 100 branches of the NAACP. We formed an anti-racist, anti-poverty, pro-justice coalition with the moral values and constitutional values at the center of it. And inside of 7 years, we passed some of the most progressive voting laws. We passed in the South a law called the Racial Justice Act that addressed the issue of race being used in the application of the death penalty, progressive educational policies. We pushed through and got one of our senators to support Obamacare, Affordable Health Care Act. Mm-hmm. But then this group, there was a reaction in 2010, and they came in. And now what they're attempting to do is go backwards. As I said, in the first 50 days, my friend, they decided to hurt 500,000 poor people, Medicaid, 170,000 mm. people who had unemployment, and 900,000 people who were getting an earned income tax credit that even Ronald Reagan said was good. It's almost as though they have a premeditated desire mm-hmm. to just go backwards as fast as possible. So that's why on 8th and April, 17 of us went in and said, "We, this is immoral, this is extreme, this is bad public policy. It's constitutionally inconsistent, morally indefensible, and economically insane." We didn't know what would happen, but we knew we had to stand. And we had to stand in the deepest tradition of the nonviolent legacy because we had tried everything else. And from that, we went from 17 getting arrested to now over 850 people. Thousands have shown up every Monday. We now have over 600,000 hits on our social media. We're doing massive voter registration, voter education. We have a legal team, the Southern Coalition for Justice and Advancement Project out of D.C., both organizing with us and examining every piece of policy against the Constitution, both state and federal. And we have directly attacked the pharisaical heresy of the far Christian right mm-hmm. that attempts to limit moral discussions to abortion, prayer in the school, and where you stand on issues like homosexuality, which when I read my Bible, Old and New Testament, even if those things are mentioned, they are not the predominant moral issues of the scripture. The predominant right. moral issues are, how do you treat the poor?
Right.
How do you love people? How do you deal with economic justice? How do you treat people on the margins? And how do you treat people, even if they're different from you, how do you find a way, as Deuteronomy said, to still respect them and protect them as your brothers and sisters?
Yeah. You know, Pastor, I think what you have described is going on with the group with which you work and the Moral Mondays people. That certainly is a sign of hope. I think, though, I want to ask you as well, how can we change mindsets and perspectives? This came up a lot during the trial because people talked about the perspective from which you were looking at it. And if you were looking at that verdict from the perspective of non-minority Americans, you didn't see much empathy or understanding there. How can we change that so that the majority of Americans have some basic sensitivity to what life is like in this country for people who aren't like them?
Well, you need a long-term, I believe, consistent moral movement like we're seeing happening in North Carolina that shapes people's consciousness and calls people together in new ways. You know, every Monday, Moral Monday, you know, let me point out to your audience a miracle. The NAACP in the South was often an organization that many, many white people were taught to hate and fear. And yet every Monday, under the banner of the NAACP, if you have 5,000 people there, 50% of them are white.
Hmm.
50%. When I came back last week, the white women in the audience had Trayvon Martin stickers on.
Hmm.
the white women in the South now. When I went to the NAACP, my general minister and president, Sharon Watkins, came over to the NAACP's convention, because we were in the same building, and announced that the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, which is predominantly white, 95% white, was passing a emergency resolution to stand with the NAACP to call for a civil rights investigation of the Zimmerman verdict. So when we come together and we destroy the myth, the white Southern strategy myth, and that is that you can somehow hurt other people without hurting yourselves, and we go directly at that with a movement that's not so much, as I said, Democrat or Republican, but calls people to a higher place, calls people to the, as Abraham Lincoln said, to our better angels, then that's where you begin to find hope. When last Monday, a white lady from Harnett County, and you got to understand, Harnett County is where the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan used to live. And she came up to me and said, Reverend Barbara, I was taught not to like, you know, the NAACP and such and such, but the only people fighting for us poor people right now, fighting for our unemployment, my Medicaid, she told me how her brother was sick and how her other brother is unemployed, is the NAACP. And then she said this. She said, I brought five other members of my family, and we all going to jail. This will be it. We've never done this in our lives. She said, but I'm so sick of people tearing us apart and dividing us. We're in this together. We had two. I had two agnostics come to the back of the stage and ask me for prayer. Now, that was real interesting. And one of them said, you know, I was an agnostic, but I never heard these scriptures. See, they never heard Isaiah 10, woe unto those who legislate evil, or right. Luke 4, or Matthew 25, really lifted up in the circles that they've been in.
Right.
And they actually said to me, would you pray for me? And we're standing with you. And thanks for helping us rethink the whole piece about faith and about justice.
Yeah. Reverend Barber, I we've got to go in just a minute here, but I want to come full circle and go back to where we started this conversation with you returning to North Carolina because of your three sons. One of the most poignant and disturbing moments for me was I read the experience of Otis Moss III in Chicago, who went home because he had children at home, and he said his son asked him, "Will I be next?"
Exactly.
You've got three sons. I've got two sons. How do you answer that question?
Well, my son said this to me, "Dad, they're trying to emasculate us all.
Yeah.
They want to take our voting rights. They want to take our lives. They want to take our educational opportunity." And I think you answer it by holding them tight. You answer it by continuing to fight against the injustices. You answer it by making sure they go around some people who do not look like them necessarily, but also who do not think about them in terms of a threat and a thug and something to be feared.
Mm-hmm.
And you answer them by saying that I think you own that pain. As I said, I went back because I needed saving again on Monday. I've tried to do the right. I've got degrees from three of the best schools. I try to follow the laws of the land. But I'm telling you, that verdict made me so afraid and so hurt and so angry that the thought ran across my mind, you know, about arming myself, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
And thinking about it in a much, and it was a moment that I felt hate that I didn't want to feel. Mm. And I know that the only thing that can save you from that sometimes is to go around a group of people that have not lost their sense of humanity to this vicious cycle of hate.
Yeah.
And so I think we all got to hold our sons a little closer, but we've also got to use this moment of pain to be more determined to fight against this senseless, constant perpetuation of violence and destruction of lives.
The Reverend William Barber is the president of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP, the second largest in the nation. He's emerged as a leading voice for justice, as organizer of the Moral Mondays direct action movement in his state. He's a very busy man. We got him right off of a plane ride, and I'm particularly grateful that he was able to spend a few minutes with us today on State of Belief Radio. Reverend Barbara, I tell you, you are an inspiration, and I am so grateful for what you do, and we will be checking in to see how it's going. I thank you for what you do and continued success in your work.
Well, God bless you and thank you and your audience. And let us never forget Isaiah 58 that says, if we cry loud and stand not against forms of injustice and violence, that one day God will call us repairers of the breach, that it should be our mission in life. And let us, as Christians, never forget that we have been anointed for such a time as this to declare good news to the poor and hope and healing to the brokenhearted. And we must take up that mantle and trust that God will take our feeble efforts when we walk by faith to do powerful things in the earth that we live.